If you have a dream, a vision, a passion, don't ever doubt yourself. You know, become lost or distracted or discouraged based on what other people say or think. Just do it. Just go for it. Don't wait, but just don't ever doubt yourself. Just do it.
Welcome to Starve the Doubts. I'm your host, Jared Easley, and today we're celebrating a great guest. His name is not Mike. His name is Jim Sweeney, and we're laughing because I've butchered the intro earlier. He has a character called Mike, and so we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first of all, welcome, Jim.
Thanks for having me on the show. Happy to be a guest.
All right. So, Jim, I don't like the lazy question, but I do want people to have a heads up on kind of what's been going on with you and what you're all about. So there's going to be some that don't know. There's going to be some that do. So let's just tell a little bit about you and what's been, you know, where are you and what you've been up to?
Well, thanks for the question. My full-time gig is developing content for a cartoon character that I created. And the character's name is Mike. And Mike, we call the ultimate talking head on sports. He's a microphone. And I have a pretty audacious goal with Mike. I believe that I've created the first ever animated brand that will transcend all sports. I'm talking SpongeBob big, Bart Simpson big, but in the world of sports. So a lot happening in our lives. You know, I do Mike content 7 days a week. I love it. I don't feel like I work a day in my life because I'm passionate about what I do. And I just love telling the Mike story.
And Jim, at what point did you realize you just love sports?
When I was a kid, probably 4 or 5 years old, when I first touched a basketball, you know, picked up a baseball glove, kicked a soccer ball, or played street hockey.
If you had to choose a sport that just really makes you fired up more than another one, what would that be?
Basketball. Absolutely love basketball. I'm 58 years old. I still play 3 times a week. Slowly, I might add, but I still play 3 times a week. I play, you know, in a number of senior tournaments, not just around the United States, but around the world. And I consider myself very fortunate to have the health, the wherewithal, the finances, and the friends to be able to play in all these tournaments.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I don't want people to miss this. I mean, you're literally traveling around the world, going to different countries, playing in a basketball league and playing in tournaments.
Yes.
And I want to know, there's probably some people who are like, hey, that's interesting. I wouldn't mind doing that, but I don't even know where to begin. Like, tell us about that.
Well, I've been playing all my life. I think I first picked up a ball when I was 5 years old. I played in high school. I played in college. I played briefly in Europe after I graduated from college, but I've never stopped playing. You know, never had any knee problems, no ankle issues. My back is fine. I keep my weight down. I eat healthy. And, you know, anybody that's got a common passion, they have a way of finding out about, you know, opportunities that are within that realm. And, you know, everywhere I go, I seem like I always am attracted to basketball players, whether they're fans or guys that actually still play. And I learned about 15 years ago, there's a national tournament that's held every year in Coral Springs, Florida. And friends had told me about it, and they said you would be interested in it. And the first time I played, I was hooked. You know, I didn't even want to leave the gym because I found there are hundreds of players from all over North America that would travel to Florida every May. It's called May Madness. And guys would play in the senior tournament. And I became friends with guys that, you know, I started at age 45 playing senior basketball. But there were guys that were 70 years old that were still playing. Guys that were 75 years old that
That's
were
incredible.
Still playing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but if you're not on a team, how do you play if you're not on a team?
All of the tournaments, you know, foster like an esprit de corps. It's about if you have a love and a passion for the sport, they'll find a team to put you on. And every one of the tournaments, and I'm playing in a tournament in 2 weeks in Buffalo, then I'm going to Costa Rica in April.
Wow.
I'll probably play in a tournament, you know, either in Chicago or Detroit this summer, and then I'll play in a couple tournaments this fall. And every one of the tournaments, they have a website, and it's a place on the website that say teams looking for players or players looking for teams. And because of the spirit of the tournaments, if you have a passion for the sport and you're reasonably good, you're always going to find a home on a team.
Is it competitive or is it more just, hey, it's okay if you're not great, you know, we just enjoy playing?
It's very competitive.
Interesting.
And if you have a competitive nature about you, you know, you'll find that even at my age, 58, I'm still extremely competitive and I never lose that competitive flair. However, I do look at the tournaments or ways, you know, to meet new friends, you know, to have fun and to come home unhurt.
Yeah, well said. So I'm sure not everybody who's stepping on that court is fantastic at basketball. That can't be the case.
You'll be surprised. There's guys that are older, they're not going to be as athletic. There's not going to be, you know, alley-oop dunking. There's not going to be, you know, guys that are going to race up and down the court like they're 19 years old, but they're going to be skilled. And, you know, they're going to have a love for the game. They're going to know how to play. Just about all the guys at an older age can shoot. Guys will have a little bit of a belly. Maybe they won't be near as fast as they once were, but they're out there because they love to do it and they have a passion to do it.
So in some of your travel and some of your experiences doing these tournaments, so what's a good story that sticks out to you?
Good stories are, you know, guys that maybe you played against when you were in high school that you haven't seen for 40 years and then he surfaces at a tournament. Or there's a guy that I played with in the World Championship that was held at the ESPN Wild World of Sports Complex in August of 2015. His name is Ian Mahoney out of Chicago. And he credits senior basketball with saving his life. He was a two-time cancer survivor, but he was just depressed after he had beaten, you know, he was excited and grateful he had beaten cancer for the second time, but he needed, you know, to just grab a hold of something that he was passionate about that would make him feel younger again and healthier again. And he got back into basketball. And he does, every tournament I go to, you see this guy, he's always there. He's a great man. He's also a very good player. But the story about Ian is that he's the presidential contact for when President Obama comes to Chicago. Mm. Ian's lived in Chicago for years. And the Secret Service contacts Ian because he's a school. He has access to a school in Chicago. And the president and his staff plays pickup basketball in Chicago as a result of the contacts that Ian has.
That's incredible. So what do you say to the person who's listening right now saying, man, I used to play basketball. I love basketball. I would be interested maybe in the idea of getting back involved, but I've been so out of the game for so long. Like, what do you say to someone who says that?
Just make sure you're healthy, that you're not overweight. All of us have a few extra pounds that we carry that we don't want. But, you know, with basketball, you can easily turn an ankle, you know, hyperextend a knee, and you don't want to have that excess weight. So just make an effort, make a commitment to yourself. You're going to get back into shape first before you get back into basketball shape.
Right, right. I think that's good advice. And how do people find out about maybe pickup games or things that are in their area if they're not, you know, familiar with this already?
Well, I have an interesting volunteer gig. I call it the best volunteer gig in the world. I'm the head of FIMBA basketball in the United States. FIMBA is an acronym for Federation International Masters Basketball Association. And we have a worldwide website, you know, that's translated into several different languages. And it's FIMBA, FIMBA.net. So that could tell you about all of the international tournaments that are hosted each year. And also on that website, you could find out about regional tournaments, not just in the United States, but in Europe, South America, Central America.
So let's go back just slightly. You talked about initially Mike, and that's your character. What inspired that?
I have always had a love of sports. I think that's been established since we've been talking.
I was wondering that about you.
I love words. I love humor. I was one of those kids that would read the dictionary and Webster's Dictionary. And I just loved play on words. I loved comics. I loved sports. And I loved good stories. And in the world of sports, I never saw a cartoon character that, you know, commented on sports. You know, there was Peter Puck a number of years ago in the hockey world. Fox Sports right now has Cletus the Transformer robot, but he doesn't speak. And I felt that there was a void out there for, you know, someone to come in to create a character. And the character that I created, his name is Mike, and he's a microphone. His real name is Michael Anthony Raffone. He's got a backstory. He's known as Microphone or simply Mike. And we call him the ultimate talking head on sports. And I wanted to create a character that was trustworthy, that was funny, that was informative, that was educational, and that was engaging. And my ultimate goal with the character is to create the first ever animated brand that will transcend all sports, like as big as Mickey Mouse or SpongeBob or Bart Simpson, but in the world of sports. And I set out to do that a number of years ago, and it's slowly built, and I'm developing a brand with our character, Mike. I envision Mike to be seen on television as an alter ego character, interacting with real life sports celebrity. I see him on jumbotrons and stadiums and arenas, providing in-game entertainment. I see him as a type of Aflac duck or Geico gecko, company spokesperson. And we've gotten Mike out there. Animation is so prohibitively expensive if you want to come out with a great animated character. And it's it ranges about $125 to $150 per finished second.
Wow.
So we didn't, my wife and I, who is also the co-creator of the character, we didn't want to put up all of our money, you know, developing all of this animation until, you know, we had places with which to distribute it. So we've gotten the character out there through the spoken word as well as through the written word. And I have published over 820 blogs within the last 3 years, published 38 sports comic books, and I started a podcast, which I, you know, expect to continue, so that people could know and understand who Mike is and what he says and what he does.
In the midst of that, you have received some interest from some big players. Are you at liberty to talk about any of that?
We were piloted by one of the top five networks, and it was a sports network. And we learned a very valuable lesson that we needed to have more content out there. We needed to have better digital metrics. And we needed to know more about the relationship we thought we wanted at that time. What I mean by that is I did not want to prematurely relinquish any rights. I wanted to keep creative control of our character because I'm the, you know, I'm the one that birthed Mike. And I have specific ideas and plans as to how I see Mike employed in the marketplace. And I didn't want somebody to hijack our vision. And I'm willing to wait, even if it takes me another year or two, to make certain that when somebody wants to license Mike, that it's done almost exclusively on our terms. So the network that we had that had piloted us, they wanted to take our character, who's an adult character. For, and when I say an adult character, he's G-rated, but his humor is such that it more appeals to adults than it would to the children, because Mike's sophisticated, you know, he's educated, he's funny, he's witty. And I felt like a lot of the humor and a lot of the things that Mike was conveying, you know, wouldn't necessarily be as embraced by kids. So I didn't want the network to change, you know, the dynamic of Mike. I wanted to remain true to the brand that we were developing. So I had a couple other people reach out to us, you know, someone that, you know, runs a program on late night television, and they wanted to replace an existing character. And my wife and I did not feel good at all about that potential relationship, even though it was very enticing, almost intoxicating, but we felt like they could potentially take our character right to the gutter. Because I think you could be funny and you could be entertaining in, you know, a more family-oriented way. And our character that we had built up, he's got a core set of ethics and values that's built into the base of who Mike is. And we wanted to make sure that we had creative control, total creative control, so Mike wouldn't say things or do things that would offend people. Now, I realize you could offend people about anything at any time, anywhere, but we just wanted to make sure that we were being diligent in what we had created.
I would imagine there's a level of flattery that comes with someone reputable, some organization or network that's expressing interest in your creation. And then I also admire the discipline that you had to say, wait a minute, no, this isn't the right fit. There would be a temptation for some to just say, well, this is this big identity and, hey, let's just, you know, let's take that social proof. So was that difficult for you?
It was not as difficult. Initially, it's very flattering. You're thinking, sure, all right, you know, we're going to get married here. We're going to, you know, sail off into a wonderful honeymoon. We're going to have a great relationship. But then when you take a step back, and fortunately, you know, my business partner, the co-creator of Mike, is also the woman I've been married to for over 34 years, is that, you know, together, I think we're a formidable unit and that we can bounce, you know, different things off each other. We, you know, are mature enough to know about the repercussions of decisions that you can make today and how they could either positively impact you or adversely impact you in the future. And in the case of, you know, a big network or other entities looking at our character, we wanted to make certain that, you know, he was going to be protected, that we would be proud of what we had produced, and knowing that we would be true to our initial beliefs and our initial goals that we had for the character. So to answer your question, yeah, at first it was very, you know, flattering, but then it was easy to just walk away because we, that, you know, potential relationship we could have entered into, that would have been great, but it would have served us maybe some immediate gratification, but not gratification over the long term. So in that regard, it was easy because we knew it wasn't a fit.
You've kind of hinted at this, but it does require a tremendous amount of patience when you have a something that you've created, something you've invested lots of energy and time and creativity into, and you haven't produced quite the result that you see in the long term or you believe is possible. So I'm hoping you'd be willing to share a story where maybe you had a rough week or something. And you thought, man, is this, you know, why am I doing this? Is this going to happen? And how you were able to kind of not allow that voice to prevent you from continuing to make progress.
Yeah, that happens quite a bit because with Mike, I already see the touchdown celebration. I could see guys, you know, high-fiving each other in the end zone. I could hear the crowd like exploding. You know, I could see the replay on the Jumbotron in the stadium. And I know that it's not a question of if, it's just a question of when. And sometimes I do get frustrated. You know, fortunately, I have my wife that I could do a little venting with, and she could bring me down, you know, to earth, and, you know, she can settle me. But you always, you know, I realize that the name of your show is called Star of the Doubts. And I've never doubted, not once, since I said I was going to do this with Mike. I've never doubted. You know, at times I can get like kicked in the head. I can get kicked right in the midsection. It takes the wind out of you. It hurts at times. It hurts sometimes when you know that you believe and you can't be unconvinced that you have a fabulous idea that is a character that could actually positively impact people and that other people don't get it. They don't initially embrace it. You know, they don't give you the time of day when you know you've got something and you just have to take a step back. You can't ever take anything personally. You just have to take a step back and know exactly who you are, what you set out to do. And you need to remain true to your vision. You can never doubt that. And you just have to, you know, immerse myself in doing something immediately after I'm, you know, have been rejected. Or if I have somebody doesn't give me the time of day, I want to immediately go back and try, you know, to come up with content that's going to be good, that's people are going to benefit from, because I know that that's what I've set out to do. I know, you know, what's in my heart, you know, to be able to positively impact, you know, people, especially in my case, sports fans, with good content that entertains, that informs, that educates. And as soon as I'm rejected, it's like I don't go and curl up in a ball, man. I just go right back at it, because then that it enables me to get past the rejection, enables me to get past, you know, the opportunity that I could very clearly see that the other people, you know, that I'm dealing with that can't see it.
And you mentioned earlier that you've got a number of blog posts, podcasts, books even, with this character. So this has turned into, you know, more than just a hobby. This is a business.
It's been my full-time gig for the last 3 years.
Now, that's impressive.
Yes. And we monetize it. It took me a while, but I was able to get affiliate relationships with the NBA store, MLB, you know, NFL, NHL, with soccer.com, with LIDS, Sports Memorabilia, EA Sports. And, you know, I'm very active in terms of embedding hyperlinks in my blogs as well as in my ebooks.
Hyperlinks meaning like affiliate links and
affiliate
things like
links,
that. Yeah,
yes.
That's smart.
Yeah. So that if I write something, say, about NBA basketball and I mention LeBron James's name, I'll obviously hyperlink LeBron James and it'll take you right to the NBA store and we make a small commission as a result of that.
And those things are happening.
They happen as we're having this interview right now.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, okay. It's very encouraging.
So, yeah, I think that's fascinating that you've got this character you're passionate about, but you're also using a smart strategy to continue to create content and point to things that, you know, produce those opportunities and that income
for
you.
We have put bricks in our foundation when we first started. And every day I want to put a new brick in my foundation so that when it happens in a big way and when it blows up, it's not like a wave's going to come by and knock down our foundation because it has been very solidly built.
Wow. Okay. So what's been like the best week when you just said, man, this is rocking?
The best week is, you know, like over the last few days is when people have come up to me and I didn't even know that they knew I existed. And they said, you know, I follow your blog, or I've listened to your podcast, or, you know, I downloaded that book that you offered for free on your website, and you got some really good stuff. And it's like I float out of the room and I say, wow, people have taken the time. They invested their time to download a book off the internet, off of my website, and they've actually read it. And then they could comment on different things that I've written in the books. It's on Thursday, you know, one of my blog posts is always Throwback Thursday. You know, I take advantage of, you know, the popular expression TBT. Yeah.
Right.
And on Thursday, I did one on Dr. J, and Dr. J had turned 66 years old. And okay. I said, number six turned 66. I had several people on Thursday that I had run into say, I read your blog post. I'm thinking, I didn't even really know that they knew what I did. But because I have a comic in every blog post, and we employ an illustrator who lives up in Massachusetts, and he has embraced what we do. He sees our vision, and he's excellent in illustrating things that I can conceptualize. I'm not an artist. And he did a phenomenal illustration on Dr. J. It's Dr. J. Now he doesn't have a big afro, but he had a big afro. He's got a stethoscope around, you know, his neck, and he's holding a basketball. And as a result of that comic with my blog post, you know, I got more shares than I would have initially envisioned. But what really, you know, puts wind in my sails, what buoys me, is when people that I'm not looking for or not seeking, they come up to me, you know, unannounced and say, I love that post. Man, that I want to go back to my desk and start writing another one.
No kidding. And has that happened where people, I could see that happening if someone kind of knows you or knows of you through the community, but what's an example of where you know them at all and they're like, hey, I know about Mike. Has that happened? I'm sure
it
has.
I have mentioned to some people, it's like there's a guy sitting not too far from me right now says, I know you, you're the Mike guy. And they say, they don't remember my name. And a lot of people call me Mike. And I think that's pretty good.
Yeah,
and it's like how the branding, it was unintentional, but it's just happened in a really good way that people call me Mike. And I'm happy with that. I just laugh. And if their name is Joe, I say, that's okay, John.
That's a good joke. All right. So one thing I know that's real important to you, and I've heard you say it casually and passively more than once, is collaboration, right? And especially when you get in some of these events and some of these communities. And so I wanted to just hear a little bit about what collaboration means to you and what maybe an example of it.
Collaboration is, more than two parties or more looking to help each other out with no expectation that you're going to pay for different services. We like to pay forward. I know there's a popular expression about pay forward. And we look to help people out before we ever ask them anything. We don't say, hey, you know, download our blog, subscribe to our podcast, do this for us, do that for us. We look to engage with people, you know, build some kind of a relationship, you know, forge a friendship of some sort. And I think you build a level of trust in that way. And my wife and I have always been, I mean, we met when we were 19 years old, 38 years ago, and we've always had the same collaborative spirit. We always look to reach out to people. And we know that even if we reached out, we did something for them today or tomorrow, we don't look for any kind of expectation other than we felt like we sowed a seed and it's going to come back and we're going to be able to reap the harvest of what we planted. And a lot of times it happens in the least likeliest of ways. And we feel good about that. We feel good about, you know, putting ourselves out there and saying, hey, you know, we're looking to help you out if we can. And we know that maybe that person won't help us, but somebody else will.
You mentioned the least likeliest of ways. Let's tell a story where that applies.
It's we're here at a conference,
right.
And there's a gentleman here at the conference, and we didn't have that much of a rapport with him, but he always comes with a significant other, and the significant other, I don't know, I've gotten to be friendly with her, and I look to help her out. I give her, you know, a like, a comment, you know, every once in a while I will share, you know, some information about what pertains to what she wants to do with her podcast and with her blog. And yeah, I didn't know that she was sharing this information with this other person. And he came up to me and he just said, hey, you know, not to be nosy, but I realize you've been talking to so-and-so. And I just think that's wonderful because she needed the help. And a lot of times when you have offered to help her, she was in a spot where she was saying, why doesn't anybody acknowledge me? Why doesn't anybody help me? And you offered to help. And this man is in a position of influence. And he says, hey, you know, I'd like to have you come in and address my group at some time in the future. And maybe that'd give you more exposure to, you know, your character and what you're doing, what your wife is doing. I wasn't expecting that. I look to help her out because I actually like her. And she has, you know, a passion to do something, to help some people out. And I'm a voracious reader. I'm always on the, you know, the internet. And I like to, you know, read different stories, different articles. And several times things had popped up that pertained to her. And I'm just looking to help her out. And I know that as a result of doing that, it's what I wanted to do. It was in my heart to do it. But I knew that it would come back, you know, somehow, you know, to be able to help me.
Wow. And it did.
Not that I did it with that intention. It's just, that's just who I am. And that's who my wife is. We like to think that.
All right. So you mentioned your wife several times. I think it's appropriate. Let's talk about Mara, your wife. One of the things that I love about you and your wife is if you weren't doing enough cool stuff, then there's Mara who's doing all kinds of amazing things.
So she's a star in our family. Yeah,
Let's just brag on her for a minute because I've met your wife. I know what she's up to, and I'm constantly amazed at the opportunities that open up through hard work, through collaboration, through generosity, through just bringing the value. And so let's just talk a little bit about what Mara's up to.
Well, thank you for asking. My wife's name is Mara. And her brand is called Mara for You.
Mara
so
for
this
you.
Is a great segue
with
the question that you had asked, because I'm the one that named her Mara for You. And that's Mara, M-A-U-R-A, the number four, the letter U. And I've always joked with her and I said, Mara, you're always for people. You know, you put people before yourself. And that's just who she is. That's what she's all about. And she and I have now worked for the third time together in business. And what we're doing now, we're both 58 years old, and we wanted to do something of purpose. We wanted to leave behind a legacy. We wanted to impact others. What we had done previously in our business, we had a very, very successful computer sales agency that we ran in Florida for 10 years. Quietly, we did extremely well financially, but it didn't have purpose. And we actually segued out of that. Then went cold turkey to do what we're doing now. A lot of people at that time thought we were crazy because they thought we were having some kind of problems. We were just losing control. And they said, how could you do something like that where you could just like slide into retirement doing what we're doing? He said, we didn't want to retire. We wanted to refire. And we refired in our lives and we wanted to do something significant and of purpose. So my wife really was the one that was like spearheading the effort. And she said, hey, you know, I want to do something that can impact others. And her mantra is called living happy inside out. And she has podcasted. She's got a couple hundred YouTube videos that she's done. She's just releasing an e-course called The Foundations of Happiness. She's an international public speaker. She writes for the Huffington Post. And she makes herself available online to share empowering, inspirational thoughts that would help others live happier and healthier from the inside out. So she this weekend is at a women's conference, obviously looking to make relationships with, you know, new people, find new friends. I'm sure that when she returns home tomorrow, everybody at the conference will know who she is because she's never met a stranger. And she will always find, because she's called Mara for You, she will always find like a nugget in that person's life that she will bring to life. And the person will say something to her. They'll carry on a conversation. The next thing you know, my wife is complimenting that person, encouraging that person, inspiring that person, and has become a friend of that person.
Wow. And I think all of that's well said. I've met her and I can testify to all of that. Let's go back for a moment to talk about some of the stuff you're working on. What's the best place for people to find out about that?
Easy to find Mike at themike.com. That's T-H-E-E-M-I-K-E, themike.com, as in the ultimate talking head in sports.
Yes.
The long-awaited microphone messiah poised to save America from its own self-induced sports coma. I have lots of taglines for Mike.
Yes, you do. And I like to always close out our interviews with a final thought. If you just have a final thought for people who are listening and on starving the doubts or just something that's going on with you, a final thought, please.
If you have a dream, a vision, a passion, don't ever doubt yourself. You know, become lost or distracted or discouraged based on what other people say or think. Just do it. Just go for it. Don't wait, but just don't ever doubt yourself. Just do it.
Well said. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We don't look for any kind of expectation other than we felt like we sowed a seed and it's going to come back and we're going to be able to reap the harvest of what we planted. And a lot of times it happens in the least likeliest of ways. And we feel good about that. We feel good about, you know, putting ourselves out there and saying, hey, you know, we're looking to help you out if we can. And we know that maybe that person won't help us, but somebody else will.